This tape is going to Dr. Barry Teicher, T-E-I-C-H-E-R, at 445 Education Building, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. This is E.G. T.Y. Dahlgren, D-A-H-L-G-R-E-N, at Box 18854, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, 73154. Today is April 5th, 1984. I just got the cassette recorder checked by the Vaseco Audio Company, where I have my recorders checked. So I will check now and see if this recording is coming through all right. I think I'll dispense with the formality of calling you a doctor or a professor, and I'll just call you Barry if you don't mind. I received your material several days ago, but I was having trouble with my tape recorder, so I think it's working all right now. So I like this little Craig recorder, and you got 90 minutes of tape on there, so I hope I can give you all the information I can provide from now on. I think I'll start out with the undergraduate interview questionnaire. I gave you my name and address previously here, and I attended the University of Wisconsin, started out in September 1925, and graduated in June 1929. I graduated from high school in 1921. At Rice Lake, Wisconsin, in the northern part of Wisconsin. I want to warn you again that my memory is very faulty. After all, I'll be 81 years old next month on May 4th. So I'll do the best I can. I have trouble remembering all the names of my relatives. I have been known by my friends as with the nickname of Ty, T-Y, after the name of Ty Cobb. Don't know whether you're a sports fan or not, but if you're anywhere near my age, you'll remember Ty Cobb, the famous baseball player for the Detroit Tigers. I got my nickname about 1913 when I hit a home run with the bases full in a kid or youth baseball league. Even though I graduated in June 1921, I didn't have any aspirations at that time of going to university, but my mother wanted me to take another year of high school courses, as there were no jobs available at Rice Lake at that time, and she didn't want me to leave the city to find a job. I thought once of going to Superior, Wisconsin, to go to the State Normal School there, which is still located in Superior. In my extra year of high school, I studied advanced algebra and economics, and I think I took another year of French at that time. I managed to do part-time jobs during this extra year, like I did during my high school years, as my mother, widowed mother, my father died in 1913, said that I couldn't go to high school unless I work, got a job. So I worked in a drugstore, opening up the drugstore in the morning and working after school on Saturdays and Sundays. So I couldn't pursue my hobby of athletics during high school except for my senior year, when I'd saved up enough money to really enjoy my senior year of high school. So I think I made the salary about $3 or $4 a week while going at the drugstore. After finishing my extra year of high school, I got a job at the night clerk in the Tourist Hotel, T-O-U-R-I-S-T, to work nights and clean and mop up the lobby at nights. Inside of a year, I was promoted to be a day clerk and later became assistant manager as the owner of the hotel. I was 70 years old and needed someone to help him part-time. So I used to have to go to the post office and get the mail twice a day from our post office box. I enjoyed this hotel work, and I worked at that from 1922 up till about August 1925, when one night the hotel caught fire from a hot water tank and burned to the ground. I worked at another hotel owned by the same owner as the Tourist Hotel for about a month. Then I decided to go to the University of Wisconsin after being convinced by one of the owners of the weekly newspaper that I should enter the School of Journalism. My friend Derbert Mattison, M-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, had spent his freshman year at the university in the electrical engineering school. Derbert asked me to be his roommate at the rooming house, which only cost, my room rent was only $3 a month. It's quite a change to the present time. I was always interested in sports, even though I couldn't participate in high school basketball until my last year of school, when I played first string on the high school basketball team during the year. I really enjoyed it. Even during high school and afterwards, I used to write sports reports for high school sports and on the city semi-pro baseball team for the Rice Lake Chronotype. You perhaps have seen his paper. It is a large newspaper now, about 9,000 circulation. And I believe they've won awards for being the best weekly newspaper in the state. They even tried to make it a semi-weekly, but they didn't have enough advertising to support it. I was fortunate being having for a close friend, Warren Leary, whose son now operates the newspaper. Warren is a graduate of Fordham, went to college there I can't think of the fellow's name right now, Frankie Frisch. He was a famous baseball player for the New York Giants, I believe. I'm going to check see if it's recording all right. Well, it's recording all right, so I'll start where I left off. Yeah, I visited the University of Wisconsin in 1924 with some friends, and so I had an opportunity to look around a little bit at that time. I did not consider any other colleges except for a possibility of going to the Superior State Normal School. when I went to, I had about $150 saved up. So I started out on that basis with the understanding that I would probably get a job waiting on table when I got to Madison. So Durward and I, Madison and I took the train from Rice Lake about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, got into Madison about 5 o'clock in the morning. So of course nowadays we don't have train service anymore from Rice Lake. I thought I'd start out and register in the school journalism. I had one of my high school teachers, you perhaps know the name, Harold Groves, was a professor of economics. He was my high school economics instructor, and he helped me a great deal in picking the courses I should take to start out with. I wanted to get all the courses that would help me in my quest for a journalism degree. I thought I'd go through Wisconsin get a journalism degree and then get a job on a newspaper or magazine or public relations, something like that. I just don't remember the details of my application procedure. Your question was, when I left for college, what'd you take with you? I just took my clothes along with me. I didn't have anything else to take. So I had a couple of suitcases, I think. And I made arrangements for getting my room with Durward Madison. We slept in the same room. And I believe the house is still a boarding house, rooming house, at 309 North Francis. One thing I can remember. I had a nice visit with Harold Groves, and he suggested that I think it was required the English 1 course, and I was glad I took a science course in physiography 4 under Professor Whitbeck, and my lab instructor was Loyal Duran, which you don't have listed. Loyal went on to University of Tennessee in Knoxville, Tennessee, and became a professor there. He died several years ago. I don't remember the details of the registration, and don't remember how much I spent for books and supplies. We had to buy our own books and supplies. I bought secondhand books. It just only cost a few dollars. About classes, I remember my physiography course. It had 2 lectures a week and 2 quiz sections under Loyal Duran, and also a laboratory period where we worked with maps and learned how to handle them. I think Loyal Duran was a graduate student at that time, and I think graduate students to handle the quiz sections and also the lab facilities. We met in Science Hall, which I remember distinctly on account of the medical smell of the place. I don't know what you mean by formal or informal. I think our classes were more or less formal. They were co-educational. And I think we were very well dressed at that time. I wore a suit of clothes. And the students generally called us by last name, unless it was a smaller group, we use the first name. I think students generally address the professors in the class as doctor or professor. I don't know anything about the problem of cutting classes. I know I didn't cut any. I appreciated the opportunity of going to college, and I felt it was necessary for me to live up to my responsibility and attend all the classes I could. We didn't have any problem with discipline in class. Plagiarism, I don't think it was ever an issue in my class or on campus, I remember. It was very important to me to get good grades, as I was out of high school 3 years, including that extra year I had. So I felt it was essential that I get good grades. I was a fairly good student in high school. I think my first year, the 8 courses I took, I had 5 A's and 3 B's. And I won a freshman scholarship. I think that time they awarded 50 freshman students $100 scholarship, which was a big help to me. About final exams, we generally have a 2-hour or 1-hour exam, generally held in the lecture room. The exams were proctored by the graduate students. I never had any open book or take-home exam. I believe our final grades were mailed to us and also posted on the bulletin board in various buildings. I had a senior thesis of rock disintegration through frost action under Professor or Dr. Twinoffel. So I had a bunch of rocks, kept them outside the window in our science hall. And I was so interested in my physiography class that I decided to major in geology and take the geology course my sophomore year. I don't know why I got away from journalism, as I'm sorry about it ever since, because I worked on the Daily Cardinal in sports reporting. I also had I forgot to mention, my roommate and I had a wait on table in a boarding house. And I think I waited on table every semester except my seniors, my last semester in school, when I lived in Trip Hall as a dormitory fellow. My favorite class within my area of specialization was Physiography 4 under Dr. Whitbeck and Loyal DeBrand. And I had one favorite professor, Professor Lobeck, L-O-B-E-C-K, who had used colored chalk to illustrate his lectures. And he sometimes traded off with Professor Whitbeck, a geography professor. I think I got an A in my physiography course, and I also got an A in mineralogy in my sophomore year in studying minerals. I must say that Loyal Duran was perhaps one of the best instructors I had. Another had to answer the telephone, so it was the cause of the interruption. I think my favorite class within my area of specialization was mineralogy. I was really interested in learning all about different minerals. The professor in charge of the mineralogy was Alexander Winchell, and he was specialized mainly in mineralogy. My favorite class outside of my area of specialization was taught by Professor Kickhofer, who was known as one of the best experts on economics in the country at that time. His lectures were very good, and we met out in AAG Hall. I remember that particularly because I had to walk to Science Hall from AAG Hall in 10 minutes in order to get another class. But I think everyone liked Professor Kickhofer. You probably read something about him. I lost track of him. About professors, we had one very eccentric professor, William Ellery Leonard. I believe he taught English, but I never did have any of his courses. We had a lot of famous professors and teachers in my geology, which I'll discuss in the other part of this survey. We didn't have much homework, I remember. The professors were always accessible in their offices when they were not busy in the classroom. I believe they had office hours, but I don't recall. I was able to spend as much time as I needed with them. I don't know just where to bring this up, but I started out in the athletic department with one of the students that was in the same rooming house that I was. And I started out working in intramurals, and eventually worked up to be in charge of intramurals in my senior year. And I got to know the coaches, which is very pleasing to me in view of my interest in sports. George Little, the director of the athletic department, was a very accessible person, and he's very nice to me. I also worked for George Berg, who later graduated from the medical school. He was in charge of intramurals when I first started out in my freshman year. The professors generally dressed very well. I never did. The only professor who's attire really struck home to me was William Ellery Leonard, who had a great big bow tie and fancy, very, very outstanding clothes that he wore. I think the professor that influenced me the most was Twinhoffel. I can't think of his first name right now, but he was my advisor from my sophomore year on, and we always enjoyed him as he was down to earth and willing to discuss things. I even criticized him one time for being too friendly to the girls in our class, because he's always seemed to be interested in talking to them. In my sophomore year, we had a field trip, geology trip up to Baraboo, go to the Devil's Lake area. And we went to the hotel there and had dance music and Twin Elf will dance with all as many girls he could. But Twin Elf got to have a great reputation in sedimentation geology, and he was one of the leaders in that. Of course, he's been dead many years after he retired in Florida. I think I have to say he had the most influence on me. And he was always well-dressed, and he had a very nice demeanor. He was older than the average professor because he taught school for a while, and then he went back to college to get his doctor's degree in geology. I've forgotten which school. I have mentioned before something about the housing situation. As I told you, my roommate stayed in the rooming house the year before, and we had a landlady who was very, very nice to all of us. We had some Jewish students from Superior, Wisconsin, one of them particularly, Harry Cohen, always asked me to help him in his work in the athletic department. I think I mentioned that I started out in athletics. I used to take tickets at the football games in 1925. Later on, I started working in the athletic office and handled tennis reservations for courts, the various tennis courts around the university system. My room was very small. I just barely had room. I was all right with my roommate, but my roommate only lived there in sophomore year because he just couldn't afford to keep going. Even though we worked together, somehow or other, he had difficulties in making the ends meet. So I got to get to inherit a small room where I had a coat closet and I had a desk and a bed. And I enjoyed that room, which I think that was a room I paid $3 a month for. I may have had to pay about $4 a month for the other rooms. I worked at the German house up on Francis and Langdon for my meals. I had to go serve breakfast in the morning before I went to school. And then I served lunch at noon and dinner at night. And one of the things that attracted me to it, because I studied German one year, he taught German in the room, in the dining room. So the people are very friendly in there. About 7 or 8 of us worked there. I didn't have much leisure time as I was working for my meals and did the odd jobs on weekends. So I studied in the in the library, in the Memorial Union. I just went in there for a Coke or something. I can't think of any particularly movies, radio shows and so that you mentioned. Dating situation. My wife and I started going together in my junior year, and we usually went to movies or dances. We had many dances in the Memorial Union. I never participated in any of the major social events of the year. I think we were a good group of students there. We didn't have any problems with alcohol or tobacco or drugs or sex at all. That all came after I left the university. Well, I've alluded several times my different sports experiences. We had a lot of famous athletes. The basketball. We used to, basketball games were held then while I was in school in the old red gymnasium. So I was fortunate being able to get tickets to all the spectator sports. Intramural sports are very popular. It was my job to schedule games like basketball games, football games, and so on. And I even got into refereeing football and basketball and umpiring baseball games at $1 a game. And that was one reason that I wanted to be a fellow, because I wanted to have the opportunity of managing the different sports that the dormitory students participated in. Like every house on Tripp and Adams Hall had their own basketball team. And got so that I couldn't get any publicity at all for our games, so I decided that when I got through refereeing some games, I'd go down to the Cardinal office and type up a report of the game so it was published in the paper. So I got to be appointed assistant sports editor of the Cardinal and reported all the events. Every fraternity had a basketball team and a football team. We played a lot of touch football and only had 6 players on a team. I mean, most of them participating in carrying the ball or passing, mostly passing. I also helped out in furnishing information to the Badger yearbook on intramurals. And when I was in school, we had an athletic journal, monthly athletic journal, and I wrote a column there about intramural sports. I have mentioned before here that I received a freshman scholarship of $100. And when I graduated from the university, I was making about $125 a month from my refereeing and other work. And I got paid for my intramural work. I also got my freshman numerals for intramural work. So if you look at some of the yearbooks about 1929 and 28, you'll find me in there. All my refereeing work umpiring and so forth. I was paid $1 a game. I even had charge of the bases for the baseball games, and I had to take care of them. And I was paid extra for that kind of work. I went to the Presbyterian Student Union on campus there while I was in school because the minister there was from my hometown, Rice Lake. I enjoyed my religious experience at the university very much. We even had what we call a church league, playing touch football and basketball. So we tried to get all the churches and participate. I wish I could remember all the details of all these things in order to really cover them. I didn't belong to any student clubs or organizations to speak of. And I ran for office once, and student government got beat. I wasn't aware of communists or other radical associations while I was in school. My freshman English instructor, Gage Clark, thought I should work hard enough in order to get to be Phi Beta Kappa, but I just had too much to take care of everything. By the way, Gage Clark left at the university after my freshman year and went to Hollywood or Beverly Hills, whatever it was, and it was in, and also went on the stage. And you may remember him as Mr. Peepers in the series that's shown on television. And I really enjoyed him very much. And I was able to get 2 A's out of him for my work. Of course, you must realize that I went to university when I was, as a freshman, when I was 22 years old, and graduated when I was 26. I've commented on the Daily Cardinal, which I enjoyed working with the various persons there. And as I told you, I worked on the Badger, but I didn't work on the Octopus. The personalities Scott Goodnight was our Dean of Men. I've forgotten the name of the Dean of Women. I can look it up in my Badger here. We thought they were wonderful people. Glenn Frank was the president of the university when I was in school. So some people liked him, some people didn't. I enjoyed the library facilities, and I did a lot of studying there nights. The Students' Health Center was very helpful to me. I always went there when I had a cold or a flu. And even had some warts burned off my palm of my hand. I never had to go to the infirmary. Of course, the field house wasn't built when I was in school. After I graduated, the field house was built, and so I quit using the gymnasium. I used the old red gymnasium for the steam room and swimming there, so it was real nice. State Street. It's a lot different when it was what it was when I was in school. I remember eating at Lawrence's restaurant. It's very good food there, and then Dad Morgan's pool hall and hangout for people was very famous. And remember the chocolate shop up toward on State Street, up towards the square, was a favorite place to take a date for some special ice cream dishes. I don't know what the relationship exists between the student body and the merchants on State Street. I think there was one other restaurant. No, I can't think of the name now. On the State Street, very interesting. About my graduation in June 1929, we had the graduation ceremonies were held in, the, I think, believe in the dairy barn by the agriculture department. So I still have my graduation certificate in the frame above my fireplace here. None of my family could come down from Rice Lake to witness the graduation. So it was kind of an empty celebration for me. About reflections, my career goals when I graduated. Well, I changed my course from journalism to geology my sophomore year, and I regret now that I did that because I've always been more interested in writing articles and books and things like that. So if I had things to do over again, I'd stay in the journalism school. We had a good reputation for the journalism school. Grant Hyde and Professor Blyer were outstanding in their position in the journalism world. I think University of Missouri has highest rating among journalism schools in the last few years. And I think Columbia University ranks very high. And Wisconsin was right along with them. I don't know how it ranks today. I think I get material from the journalism school, and it seems like they've expanded a lot since I was in school. I enjoyed my experiences on the Cardinal, the Athletic Review, and the Badger yearbook. I forgot to mention before, but when I was working on the Cardinal, I picked an all-fraternity football team and got each player to pay for his own cut and photograph to be used in one of the Sunday editions. I know Gren Thistlethwaite, the football coach at that time, picked up three players and put them on his varsity squad for the following fall. Well, I'll shut down for now and get started on something else. I think I better start commenting on the roster of the geology and geography department that you sent me. The head of the department when I was in school was Dr. C. K. Lee, Charles K. Lee. He was a professor and chairman of the department. When I was in school, the information I gathered is that Dr. Leith was probably the most outstanding structural geologist in the country. Our geology department was considered to be one of the best in the country. And it was right along with University of Oklahoma and the University of Texas and Missouri School of Mines, also Colorado School of Mines. Michigan was also rated very high, as I remember. Warren J. Meade was very outstanding in his field. He is an expert on geophysics and taught all the courses on geophysics when he was in school. I never did take any courses under him, but everyone spoke highly of him. William H. Twinoffel was my advisor. He was a professor all through his career at Madison. He started up the sedimentation laboratory in the basement of Science Hall. I have been to the new geology building at Wisconsin, and it's one of the best in the country. Of course, Weeks was responsible for the growth of the department by his doing the contributions to build the building and the museum. Ray Whitbeck was professor in charge of the geography department. He was our lecturer in a course, physiography. I really enjoyed that very much. Alexander Winchell, I mentioned before, professor of mineralogy. The continuation of track one to track two in the discussion of the geology and geography departments. On the other side, I was commenting on Vernor Finch. Armin K. Lobeck was a very outstanding geology professor in his lectures by the use of colored chalk and maps and structures and all kinds. I believe he went back to Columbia University after finishing teaching at Wisconsin. Frederick Thwaites, the curator, was in charge of the museum and also taught courses in glacial geology and geological mapping. I had two courses under him. And in geological mapping, and we took a field trip for a week to Devil's Lake area south of Baraboo. Freddy, we used to call him. I taught a course in glacial geology, and we had a 2 or 3 day field trip to observe the various glacial geological features throughout the state, like the Driftless area, the glaciated area of Wisconsin. I enjoyed my courses under Thwaites very much. Con Emmons was an assistant to Alexander Winchell, and Con taught the laboratory work in mineralogy and the identification of minerals. This is one of the best courses I ever took, and I'm really interested in the mineralogy as taught by Con Emmons. John Fry was an outstanding geography professor. I really enjoyed hearing his lectures and working with him. I also worked with him in Washington during World War II in the production department. I lost track of John Fry. I don't know whether he's still alive or not. Marion Harbaugh was a geology instructor, which I had little contact with. Geneva Loft was also a geography instructor, and I had her for courses, not for courses, to different classes, when to substitute for someone else. Guy Harold Smith was an outstanding geography professor, and I believe I have in my library, I have looked for it, History of Wisconsin. I'll shut down now and see if I can find it. I couldn't find the Guy Harold Smith book I was referring to, and if I find it, I'll add some more comments later. Glenn Trewartha is an outstanding geology professor. I mean, geography professor. I remember Glenn Trewartha being an expert on Far Eastern geography, and he was an expert on Japan when I was in school. Clarence Swanson, I had little contact. He was a paleontology expert. I was wrong on that. I'll strike that. He was an outstanding geology instructor, but I didn't have any classes with him at all. Robert R. Schrock came from the University of Indiana when I was in school, and I took a course in paleontology from him. He was brought to Wisconsin to be help Twenhoffel on sedimentation geology. I've lost track of Richard Lund. He was an instructor and a graduate student when I was in school. Andrew Leith is the son of Charles K. Leith. He's retired now, and I don't know just where he is. I'm not familiar with Robert M. Dickey at all. I remember the name, and that's all. Stanley Tyler is dead. He was one of my classmates. He graduated a year ahead of me at Wisconsin and later got his master's and doctor's degrees. And he taught geology until he had a heart attack and died. Norman Newell came from the University of Kansas to Wisconsin. Norman Newell replaced Schrock in charge of paleontology, but he was always considered an excellent geologist. At this point, I want to mention to you, and perhaps you have this book titled The History of Geology and Geophysics at the University of Wisconsin, Madison, 1848 to 1980, by Sturgis W. Bailey. Who's the editor, he's still in the department. If you don't have this book, you should have it for your library, and you could use it for reference purposes. Billy has done a wonderful job in publishing material of this type. Now I'll start on the House Fellow questionnaire. I had not lived in the residence hall before becoming a House Fellow. As I told you before, that I had a room for only $3 a month. The reason I decided to become a House Fellow, I observed several of them in operation in my work as a basketball referee and a football referee and other activities. Athletic activities in the dormitories. I don't remember the application process for becoming a house fellow. I just merely went around to see people, professors and especially a minister from Rice Lake who was located in Madison helped me immensely. I had a lot of these people write letters to the proper authorities to recommend my appointment as a house fellow. As you probably noticed, most of the house fellows are all graduate students. I don't think there are very many of them like me that came in as a student. I can't describe the orientation process because I don't think we were organized well enough at that time. You see, the dormitory system just started a couple of years before I got out there. I enjoyed my work very much as a house fellow. I don't recall of ever discussing the philosophy and traditions of the house fellow system. So I got acquainted with practically all of the students in the dormitories through my work in the intramural program. I perceived my major responsibility is to keep order in the unit. I was in charge of High House, H-I-G-H. I think it still carries the same name. I haven't been back to the dormitory system since I left it. As far as I know, I don't think I ever conducted an orientation session for the residents. We had some rules and regulations, but I don't remember just how they were communicated to the residents. They'd come to me with their problems. We had most all of our dormitory residents in my unit were freshmen, with a couple of seniors and one or two graduate students. We had a parlor there, I suppose it still exists, where we played cards. I remember we played the game of hearts a lot. And we had a daily newspaper every day, I think one of the Madison papers, to give us a chance to keep up with world events. As I remember, we didn't sponsor any social events, sport contests, or other group projects. I handled the athletics for the whole dormitory. I don't recall of ever being involved with faculty administration, members of the housing staff. After all, it's over 50 years ago when I was a fellow. I graduated in 29, age of 26. I can't describe a typical day. It seemed like went to bed at night and got up in the morning and had breakfast, went to my classes and came back for lunch, and then classes again in the afternoon or studies, and the evening meal. We always were well-dressed, and we were served, as I remember, by persons. I remember our group had its own table. I don't recall the types of conversations, just current events. I think we all had good table manners and we had good, very attractive and good quality food. I don't remember who my supervisor is. I looked in my badger and tried to see if I could find his picture, but I can't think of it. It seemed like it was Anderson or Johnson or something like that. He had some connection with the dormitory system where people paid for their lodging and meals and so forth. We didn't have any special meetings of the supervisor. We just met just to take care of a problem that might have arisen. I happen to know the member of the residence hall staff, Miss Palmer from La Crosse, Wisconsin, was in charge of the food. I think she did a good job. Her brother was one of my classmates, Leland Palmer, and who later became a geologist and died of a heart attack in his home in San Antonio, Texas, several years ago. I'm not familiar with other colleges or residence halls. It's hard to compare the residence halls with fraternity houses and YMCA co-ops and off-campus rooming houses. I think the dormitory system is very good. I never heard of any religious discrimination or racial discrimination in the residence hall. I didn't have any encounters with the dean of men or the dean of women. Well, I wouldn't have with the dean of women because we are just men in our dormitories. Of course, I resigned my job as a house fellow probably in June 1929 to find a job in the oil industry, as I was engaged to be married at that time. And I realize now that I should have stayed there and kept up the program as it furnished me living expenses. And I was in charge of the dormitory, the intramural program out there, so I had a really nice job both ways. I can't think of any milestone events or any daring themes in the history of the housing. I'll listen to all of the tape sometime tomorrow, and I'll make notes of what I've overlooked or correction. I want to mention now also, I know I've overlooked some of the names in the athletic program, but I have a book that you're probably familiar with called On Wisconsin Badger Football by Oliver Kuechel and Jim Mott. Jim Mott is a personal friend of mine, and he's been very helpful to me in furnishing me media guides and brochures about the athletic program in Wisconsin. So I know this is a hit or miss thing here, but I'll see if I can listen to it tomorrow and make notes of what I've overlooked or need corrections. So I'm afraid I've done a very poor job on this because of my age and memory here. I just can't remember things like I used to. I used to have a very good memory, especially when I was in the hotel business, when I could greet a traveling salesman to come to town once a month or once a year or something like that by his first name. Of course, I had an advantage in knowing when from the mail waiting for these men that I could be looking out for them. So I'll say goodbye for today and get back with this tomorrow. Well, this isn't tomorrow, this is Saturday, April 7th, as I've been busy with my one client on some reports, so I just had to drop everything else and concentrate on that. So I haven't felt too good today either, so I just haven't got around this thing. So I want to start listening and making notes, and don't know just when I'll get through with it. So I hope I can fill in the gaps as I go along. I'll talk to you later. I'm talking to you again on Sunday afternoon, April 8th, at by 1:30 p.m. I've now listened to all of the tapes so far and noticed that I've left out some things. Also, I want to make one major correction. think I told you about Guy Harold Smith writing a book on Wisconsin, physical geography of Wisconsin, but I was mistaken. It should have been Lawrence Martin, who is written up on page 44 of the History of Geology and Geophysics by S.W. Bailey, which I referred to you before. Lawrence Martin's daughter was one of my classmates, so I got to know more about him. He is especially well known for his book titled Physical Geography of Wisconsin. That's a book I couldn't find. I don't know what happened to it. I probably loaned it to somebody and never got it back. I think he's worth mentioning here as a geographer. I'm sorry I can't think of anything about Guy Harold Smith. I think he was also in the geography department, and I think I had him for a lab or quiz instructor. I want to refer again to the History of Geology and Geophysics by S.W. Bailey to page 87, which discusses the career of Armin K. Lobeck, A-R-I-M-I-N-K-L-O-B-C-K. He's perhaps, as I mentioned before, one of the best colored chalk artists I've ever known. He studied at Columbia University, where he developed his talents in freehand drawing, drafting, and preparing block diagrams. He took his PhD degree in geomorphology. At the end of World War I, he spent an interesting stint preparing maps of Europe for the Paris Peace Conference, where C.K. Leaf noticed his talents and persuaded him to come to Madison. He joined the department in 1919 for a stay of 10 years. I had his textbook on geomorphology, but I don't know what happened to it. He's famous for his physiographic diagram of the United States. I think he's probably the most colorful lecturer I ever had at the University of Wisconsin. I hope you'll have the opportunity of getting a copy of this History of Geology and Geophysics by Bailey, as I think you can probably glean other interesting anecdotes and descriptions of the many famous people in the geology and geographical department. I want to refer again to that book on Wisconsin Badger football by Oliver Kuechel and Jim Knott. Kuechel's name is spelled K-U-E-C-H-L-E. I'm sure Jim Mott can probably get you a copy of this very interesting football book. 288 pages. I want to refer again to the chapter about George Little, who came to Wisconsin in 1925 and coached 2 years the football team. His first season, 1925, Wisconsin won 6 games, lost 1 to Michigan, and tied 1 to Minnesota. One of his coaches was Earl Red Blake, B-L-A-I-K, who went on to become one of college's greatest football greatest coaches at Army. Blake handled the ends in his 1 year at Wisconsin, moved on to Dartmouth, and then to West Point. Other famous coaches under Little, George Little, were Tom Leib, L-I-E-B, who came from Notre Dame, Irv Uteritz, U-T-E-R-I-T-Z of Michigan, who came from Michigan, and Guy Sunt of Wisconsin. I remember a Michigan game in 1925 when Michigan beat Wisconsin 21-0. The game was all but over in the first 2 minutes, in which the Wolverines took a 14-0 lead. I know I was an usher at the football game that day. Many in the capacity of a crowd of 30,000 men had not yet settled in their seats when Benny Friedman, on the first play from scrimmage, hurled a 35-yard pass to halfback Bruce Gregory, who carried it 30 yards more across the Some of the crowd were still looking for their seats when Michigan scored again. Oddly, after the first touchdown, Wisconsin elected to kick off. Friedman took the kick on his own 15-yard line and made a darting run in and under the frustrated Bridges. Went 85 yards for a touchdown. And Friedman added both extra points. In spite of the demoralizing start, the Badgers held their own for the next 58 minutes, although only Michigan scored again. Friedman passed 8 yards to Benny Oosterbaum for another touchdown in the third quarter. Little coached in 1926, but which was not quite as good as his first season, although Wisconsin did finish a respectable fifth in the conference race with a 3-2-1 record and overall season of 5-2-1. Again, the Badgers were involved in an extraordinary game with Minnesota. This is a very unusual game, which I saw. Wisconsin never made a first down during the game. Minnesota made 18 first downs, and Wisconsin was out, gained in place from scrimmage, almost 10-1, 289 yards to 31. With the 4 minutes left of the game, Wisconsin led 10-9. Minnesota fumbled 5 times, and Wisconsin recovered 4. The odd pattern of the game began in the first quarter when Jeff Burris, who played in, scooped up a fumble and raced 84 yards across Minnesota's goal. A point was added and Wisconsin led 7-0. When Minnesota scored next, from going from midfield to the goal line in 3 plays. Minnesota also scored a field goal and they were ahead 9-7. Wisconsin regained the lead when another fumble of a Minnesota fumble was recovered. Wisconsin couldn't gain, but on fourth down from a difficult angle from the 30-yard line, Lester Lytle, L-E-I-T-L, sent a place kick over the bar for a 10-9 lead. So it stood until only 4 minutes remained. Here, Molly Nydahl, N-Y-D-A-H-L, took Raleigh Barnes' punt in midfield and raised 55 yards for a Minnesota touchdown. So this is perhaps the most unusual game I ever saw, where team never made a single first down. You'll find this in more detail on page, starting on page 107 of the Kuko Jim Mott book. The 1928 season was one of the best seasons that I saw at Wisconsin. At that time, Thistlethwaite was the coach. In 1928, Wisconsin beat Notre Dame. When Knute Rockne brought his team to Wisconsin, and Wisconsin won 22-6. I also saw that 1928 season when Wisconsin played at Iowa in the mud. I think the score was 12-0, although the book doesn't show that. Wisconsin also beat Alabama 15-0 and tied Purdue in 19-19. And the only game Wisconsin lost six to nothing when the great Bronco Nagurski almost single-handedly beat Wisconsin. It was quite inspiring to me to be able to know most of the football players 1928 personally. And of course, most of the seniors at that time graduated the following June with me and 1929. I'm sorry I don't have a book on basketball. When I could tell you more about Walter Meanwell. He is considered one of the greatest coaches in the history of basketball. It's too bad that Meanwell got involved with a controversy with Clarence Doc Spears. I think it's worthy of mention to discuss the road material survey program of the Wisconsin Geological Survey under the guidance of Ernest Bean. I spent the summers of 1927 and 1928 with the Wisconsin Geological Survey. My first summer, I worked with Harold Barton, who incidentally introduced me to my wife. We were two of us in the party, and we were assigned all over Wisconsin to work with the highway department in finding road material deposits such as gravel pits and limestone quarry sites and shale pits. I suppose other states have done something similar, but I worked chiefly in western Wisconsin and northern Wisconsin in the summer of 1927. And then I worked the following summer in charge of a party of two of us, Philip Larson and we mostly worked in southeastern Wisconsin. It was very interesting work. I think my salary was $125 a month at that time. Phil Larson graduated with me in 1929, and he was captain of the track team in athletics. He was a 100-yard dash man, and I think his best time was 9 4/5 seconds for the 100-yard dash. I have my 1930 Badger publication, which I got in May in 1929. And it's been a big help to me to refresh my memory of all the athletes that I knew in school keep up with their, I've tried to keep up with their activities. In glancing through my Badger, I came on a list of famous alumni. There's chosen as outstanding persons, and I finally run across the name of Donald L. Halverson, because he's been the director of halls and commons at the university in a number of years, now having complete charge of the service of the women's and men's dormitories besides the three commons at the Memorial Union. And because he's the only director of such a department, any university can show a profit in his field during his operating year. He got his BA degree in 1915, the master's degree in 1918. So I'm very glad I found that. I couldn't think of his name before. I probably had several conferences with him about my tenure as a fellow in Tripal, but I just can't remember any details of him. But I'm glad to be able to find his name and photograph on page 175 of the 1930 Badger. Also noted on page 174 of the Badger, a photograph and a biography of William H. Kiekhofer, which I thought is, which I've just talked about before as being one of the best professors of economics. He got his PhD degree in 1913. He's instructed in the universities since his graduation, is ranked as professor since 1920. I don't know when his career ended. But he's an author of An Outline of Economics, Syllabus of Economic Theory, and he's had a book in preparation titled Economic Principles, Problems and Policies. He's also active in civic activities in Madison. On page 275 of the Badger is the section about the intramural sports. I haven't mentioned it before that Stubb Allison was the intramural director. I wrote the section about intramural athletics in 1928. Theta Chi fraternity won the Badger Bowl, which was emblematic of fraternity supremacy in all sports. I noticed here on page 276, that Botkin House of Trip Hall won the dormitory championship in basketball. I knew most of these players personally. The Theta Psi tackle football team won the championship of this sport. I still keep in touch with Bob DeHaven in Minneapolis, Minnesota, who was active in athletics with the Theta Chi fraternity. I talked to him last August when I was at the Minneapolis airport. And we were together at the 50th alumni get-together, 50th anniversary of the Alumni Association at the Memorial Union. I was very glad to have the opportunity of working in enjoying intramural sports because it gave me a chance to get acquainted with every fraternity and school that participated in the dormitory groups and the church league groups. As I told you before, Allison, one of the assistant football coaches, was in charge of intramural activities. I've lost track of him, don't know whether he's still alive or not. I always try to attend all the different athletic events. So it didn't cost me anything. It's just a question of whether I had enough time to do so. But it was a lot of fun to be with these people. Guy Lohman was the baseball coach for the baseball team. It's written up in this Badger. When I was in school, the hockey team played on the rink on the lower campus. Of course, now they're out at the Dane County Fairgrounds Coliseum, I believe it's called. The only trouble with the hockey, played outdoors and really cold, got very cold at times. I was always interested in the tennis competition at the University of Wisconsin. One of the players, Dave Freeborn, was captain in 1928, I believe, and he's still active in playing veterans tennis over at Tulsa, his hometown. I used to correspond with him years ago and just haven't kept up with him lately. On pages 488-489 of the Badger about the dormitory program showed pictures of the fellows of both halls. Of course, I was not in any of these pictures because it was a year ahead of me, but I remember some of them, like Don Schutt, S-C-H-U-T-T, was on the track team, and George Chandler was a graduate student. And Ralph Homewood. Also, Paul Henshaw was a chemistry graduate student. The article on page 488 states that the men's dormitories have outgrown the experimental stage of the last 2 years, now under the government and control of the Men's Dormitory Association, form one of the smooth running departments of the university. Dormitory men enjoy many advantages which would be difficult to secure anywhere else on the campus. Personal contacts with prominent men of all professions by means of informal talks in the dens of the various houses. The intramural fields offered unexcelled athletic facilities. In the beautiful lakeside situation of the halls, there are but few advantages enjoyed by the residents of Tripp and Adams Hall. The most successful social season was enjoyed by the halls this year. Dances and song fests in the refectory were always attended with great enthusiasm. Seems funny, I can't remember a lot of these details. A dormitory, library, and reading room was opened in the basement of Violet's house late in April. Nearly 300 volumes of short stories, detective stories, fiction, nonfiction, science, and biography and art, as well as newspapers and magazines from all over the world to be read any time during the day. The success of Tripp and Adams Hall is evidenced every fall by the large number of room applications received by the director of dormitories and commons. As their plans for the future work out, they will undoubtedly receive even greater approval and acclaim. It seems funny, I don't remember a lot of these things. I'm just about out of tape here, so I think I better wind this tape up, and I can't think of anything special to add to this. I'm sorry that I haven't been able to do a better job on this whole project, but it's wonderful to be able to check back on this. I'm just looking here at the picture of Don Michael John. His father was in charge of the experimental college that it lasted for 2 or 3 years in the dormitories. Well, I think I better say goodbye for now, and hope you can get some good out of this tape. Well, I'll just let the tape run out. I think it's just about through anyway here. So I'll try to get this off in the mail to you tomorrow if possible. I'm supposed to go down to Norman late this afternoon to a meeting of the Scandinavian American Student Organization there, who will have a talk on Finland tonight. I'm waiting for a chance to get a ride down there. So goodbye for now, and wish I could have the opportunity of meeting you somehow. Well, I see I left too much tape here. I thought I could use it up here. It'll run out any time now, I guess. Well, if I can think of something else to add later, I'll do so. But I'm afraid I've run out of soap so far.